O God, who art the author of all manifestations, the source of all sources, the fountainhead of all revelations, and the wellspring of all light, I testify that by thy name the heaven of understanding hath been adorned, and the ocean of utterance hath surged, and the dispensations of thy providence have been promulgated unto the followers of all religions. I beseech thee so to enrich me as to dispense with all save thee, and be made independent of anyone except thyself. Rain down then upon me out of the clouds of thy bounty that which shall profit me in every world of thy world. Assist me then through thy strengthening grace, so to serve thy cause amidst thy servants, that I may show forth what will cause me to be remembered as long as thine own kingdom endureth and thy dominion will last. This is thy servant, O my Lord, who with his whole being hath turned unto the horizon of thy bounty, and the ocean of thy grace, and the heaven of thy gifts. Do with me then as becometh thy majesty and thy glory, and thy bounteousness and thy grace. Thou in truth art the God of strength and power, who art meet to answer them that pray thee. There is no God save thee, the all-knowing, the all-wise.
Olgus sulla, o issand, kes oled kutsunud ellu kõik loodud asjad oma käsu jõul. O issand, aita neid, kes on loobunud kõigest peale sinu ning kindlusta neile vägev võit. Saada alla nende peale, o issand, taevaste ja maapealsete ja nende vaheliste inglite hulgad. Et nad toetaksid sinu teenreid, abistaksid ja tugevdaksid neid, võimaldaksid neil saavutada edu, kinnitaksid neid, ehiksid neid hiilgusega, osutaksid neile au ja ülendust, rikastaksid neid ning teeksid nad edukaiks imeväärse võidu abil. Sina oled nende issand, taevaste ja maa issand, kõikide maailmade issand. Tugevda seda usku, o issand, enne teenrite jõulabi. Ja lasa neil võtta võimus kõikide maailma rahvaste üle, sest nemad on tõeliselt sinu teenrid, kes on eraldanud kõigest muust peale sinu, ning sina oled tõesti tõeliste usklike kaitse. Luba, o issand, et nende südamed võiksid truuduses sellele rikkumatule usule saada tugevamaks kui miski muu taevastese maa peal ja kõikjal nende vahel. Ning tugevda, o issand, nende käsi oma imelise jõumärkidega, et nad võiksid avaldada sinu võimu kogu inimkonna silme ees.
O God, my God, fill up for me the cup of detachment from all things, and in the assembly of thy splendors, and bestowals rejoice me with the wine of loving thee. Free me from the assaults of passion and desire. Break off for me the shackles of this nether world. Draw me with rapture and to thy supernal realm, and refresh me amongst the handmaids with the breathing of thy holiness. O Lord, brighten thou my face with the light of thy bestowals. Light thou mine eyes with beholding the signs of thine all-subduing might. Delight my heart with the glory of thy knowledge, that encompasseth all things. Gladden thou my soul with thy soul reviving tidings of great joy, O thou King of this world and the kingdom above, O thou Lord of dominion and might, that I may spread abroad thy signs and tokens, and proclaim thy cause, and promote thy teachings, and serve thy law, and exalt thy word. Thou art verily the powerful, the ever-giving, the able, the omnipotent.
Ó Deus, Deus meu, guarda os teus servos fiéis contra os males do egoísmo e da paixão. Protege-os com os olhos vigilantes da tua benevolência contra todo o rancor, ódio e inveja. Abriga-os na fortaleza inexpugnável da tua causa e salva-os dos dardos da dúvida. Torna-os manifestantes de teus gloriosos sinais. Ilumina-lhes as faces com os raios refulgentes emanados da aurora da tua divina unidade. Alegra-lhes o coração com os versos revelados do teu santo reino. Fortalece-os pelo teu poder sobrepujante que vem de teu domínio da glória. És o generoso, o protetor, o onipotente, o misericordioso.
از افق هر شیئی ظاهر و نجمت آید از هر شطری ساته محتاجان بابد عطایت را می طلبند و عشاق روید لغایت را. چون خلق از توست و امید مکنونه قلب از تو سزا باران که امام وجوه اغیار محرمان کویت را به تراز جدیدی مزین نمایی و به اسم بدی فائز فرمایی. چون خلق از تو و امید مکنونه قلب از تو سزاواران که امام وجوه اغیار محرمان کویت را به تراز جدیدی مزین نمایی و به اسم بدی فائز فرمایی.
Thy name is my healing, O my God, and remembrance of Thee is my remedy. Nearness to Thee is my hope, and love for Thee is my companion. Thy mercy to me is my healing, and my succor in both this world and the world to come. Thou verily art the all-bountiful, the all-knowing, the all-wise.
Regen Khairullah Qul Subhanallah Huwallah Kullun Ibadun Lahu Wa Kullun Bi'amrihi
Allah Papa. How was my English Bahia today? Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Every day is richer. Yeah, of course. Alava. This is the only word that I can say properly. The others is. Okay, so we start with another really joyful day. And before that, I have to give some announcement. Our dear friend from Portugal, he lost his block note, his black one. So please, if somebody found that, it's not a private diary, so you can, it's not interesting for other people. So please, if you found that, go to SAPA from Portugal. Thank you. Another thing is that there is a paper on located always in the same place on the window before the entrance of the restaurant. If you wish, you can put your email. So to have, after all, you know, some copies of that paper with all your email to be in connection, in communication the next months before the next year that we will be together here. So put your email there. This is very important announcement that I suppose that you have a lot of questions, and you put this question maybe when you are in lunchtime or dinner time with Mr. and Mrs. Nakhchavani. So some of these questions maybe they could be interesting for also the other people. So because we have this unique opportunity to have Mr. and Mrs. Nakhchavani and Bahia June here, so please write your question and put in this box. So you have only 2 days, and the last day we have this morning, very important and precious morning for answering the question. So please fulfill that box with your question. Now, we welcome all together Mr. Nakhchavani.
You saw the maps displayed, and you saw with what loving care Shoghi Effendi drew these lines, decided on the colors, and how he connected the countries to these 12 generals. The 12 generals were that he had the national spiritual assemblies that he had already formed. He added Canada, he added South America, he added Central America, and he added the Italo-Swiss. So there were 8 plus 4, they became 12. And he called them the generals of the Army of Light. And he wrote to each one of them a special message outlining their duties under the 10-year crusade. And then he had already called on the Baha'i world to have these intercontinental conferences. And these intercontinental conferences, there were four of them, and at these conferences he re-divided, if you like, the goals according to these conferences. So when he's writing, let us say, to the Western Hemisphere, he gave them the goals for the Western Hemisphere. When he was addressing the European continent or the European conference, he only gave them the goals for the European conference, and so on and so forth. So he had already two sections. One was the 12 generals. Then another way of dividing the goals was according to continent. And then he also looked at the whole world as one unit, and he had a major message to the Baha'i world that he had to choose one of these continents and let them have two messages, one for the continent and one for the world. And he chose Wilmette. He chose the cradle of the administrative order. And he wrote a major message for the whole world, which applies to all continents. Having done all this, he also, as I have put in the notes, he sent this document here that you saw displayed also with the maps. He also issued this. Now, what is this? He sent one copy to the British Isles and one copy to the United States. The one that I have in my hand is the copy that was published in the British Isles. They are exactly the same. And this, it's called the Baha'i Faith 1844-1952. Then, after showing the statistical part, information statistical and comparative, then he says, including supplement. 10-year International Baha'i Teaching and Consolidation Plan, 1953-1963, compiled by Shoghi Effendi, guardian of the Baha'i faith. He sent this to, as I told you, to these two national assemblies and asked them to publish it. Now, when you look at this booklet, you see it is in two parts. The first part is purely information up to 1953. All this section, which comprises 47 pages, has all the information about the Baha'i world statistically up to 1952, the beginning of 1953. Now, this section, which is here, the first part, the Baha'is were familiar with this type of work by Shoghi Effendi, because he started issuing statistical booklets of this type in 1944. The first edition, if you like, of the statistics in the Baha'i world came out in 1944. It was a very small booklet, about half the size of this page, and it had very little information about the Baha'i world, because the Baha'i world at that time was not the Baha'i world that was in 1952, at the end of 1952. So that was the first one. Then, between 1944 and 1953, he issued two more of these booklets. Every time a little bit thicker, a little bit thicker, as the Baha'i world was growing. And then he produced this, these 47 pages, which gives you an idea of how the Baha'i world was at the time of the beginning of the 10-year crusade. And then the second part is the 10-year crusade and the goals and objectives of the plan. He, as you know from the notes, he had 27 objectives for the 10-year plan. And according to what he did here was, he first took these goals and enumerated them as you have them enumerated in the notes, 27, under 27 headings. Then after that, he followed that with a whole page of the territories mentioned by Abdu'l-Bahá in his tablets of the Divine Plan. It is the same list that you find in your own notes. Then he showed how many of these 27 objectives, and there are 10 of them, were goals that had to be achieved through the activities and the initiative of the World Center itself. In other words, himself, and then later on, of course, the hands of the cause, who continued his work until 1953. So whatever had to be done at the World Center, 10 of these 27, he pulled out and classified them as World Center goals. And then the rest, then he divided in different ways. For example, according to continents, he divided the goals according to continents. According to national spiritual assemblies, he divided all the goals according to the 12 generals. Then, which countries were to form national assemblies? A whole list. Which countries had to acquire temple sites? Another list. Which countries in the world were to acquire national endowments? Another list. And so on, according to goals. So he listed and relisted and rearranged the goals. For example, alphabetical list of the territories to be opened. See. Now, these, he divided the world into three divisions. The first were the 12 generals. He called these communities, where the 12 national assemblies were formed, he called them the administrative bases for the work of the 10-year crusade. Then he had what he called consolidation territories. Consolidation territories were territories where already there were Baha'is but needed special assistance. In the title, as you see here, he says 10-year international Baha'i teaching and consolidation plan. So the rest of the world he divided into two territory sections, consolidation and virgin. So it became three parts: the 12 generals, the bases, the administrative bases, then the consolidation territories, then the virgin territories. That's how he divided the world. If you like, you can look at it today in terms of category A, B, C. Except that the House of Justice is telling us that in terms of our countries, Violet, could you give me some of that? Thank you. I don't know what to say.
The three
ABC. Yeah, he had ABC. The House of Justice is telling each national assemblies under the five-year plan, consider yourselves to be in charge of the whole world, so to speak. That is your country. Divide your country into clusters. You see, the clusters become these either virgin territories or consolidation territories. And then the National Assembly itself, sitting in its national office, becomes the administrative basis, the general for the whole country. Except that the House of Justice, instead of having three categories, told us make it four categories, because the work of the faith was developing, and therefore the country is divided into four different categories, A, B, C, D. So that's how it is. And blessed are those countries that can have more and more A clusters. Because the idea, the whole hope of the House of Justice is to have as many national assemblies as possible, having the, at least the majority of their clusters to be A clusters. That is the hope of the House of Justice. So that we can really take the plunge into this great ocean. And the ocean is to spiritualize and to attract the masses to the cause of God. Because the whole purpose of the administration is teaching, as you know this already very well. Another thing that Yogi Effendi did, because of his desire to carry out the goals as soon as possible, maybe because he knew his end was approaching very rapidly, he said, it is true, we have assigned these goals according to the generals and the different responsibilities for each national assembly. But for example, when it came to virgin territories, if this National Assembly could not send pioneers to that country, anybody, anywhere in the world could go there. So he opened the doors for anybody to go anywhere in order to achieve the goals as rapidly as possible. In addition to that, when he saw that one National Assembly was lagging behind and was not doing what it should do, and unfortunately there were some National Assemblies because of their internal problems, because of their financial problems, they could not do much. So he extended his arm. And when he saw that there was a strong community anywhere in the world, he would call on them, try and go there, to these virgin territories. For example, Violette will be talking to us, I hope, about Mr. Olinga and what happened to him. Now, Mr. Olinga and the Baha'is in Uganda were in Uganda. Uganda was not one of the generals. It did not have a National Assembly. It had teaching committees and had local assemblies and so on. So what does Shoghi Effendi do? He looks at his Baha'i world and he says, he sends a message, a cabled message, to Uganda. He says, we need pioneers in the British Cameroons, in West Africa, for French Cameroons in West Africa, in Togoland, French Togoland. We need pioneers for British Togoland. We need pioneers for Ashanti Protectorate. We need pioneers to go to Northern Territories, which was part of Ghana in those days. You, Baha'is of Uganda, arise and go to these places. Now, these territories he had already assigned to either the American or to the German or to the Indian or to different national assemblies. But because they were slow, because they did not have the right people to be sent immediately, he called on this small community in Uganda to arise and go pioneering. Then a time came in Cameroon Republic. The same thing. As Mr. Olinga developed his work in the Cameroon Republic, he gave them goals as well. So this is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that Shoghi Effendi did not tie his hands. He knew that these goals had to be achieved by a certain time. And he pushed the Baha'i world in any way he could in order to ensure total and immediate victory. Now we come to the 27 objectives of the 10-year plan. Now these 27 objectives, some of them, as I told you, were 10-year world center goals. And as we go over them, if there is any need for explanation, I will explain those goals. But all of them do not need explanation. Some of these objectives are purely statistical in nature. For example, take number 3 on page 3. Over 2-fold increase in the number of languages. All right, then there is an explanation of what happened. This does not need any explanation by me here. Take the next one, doubling the number of martial askars. Now, this may need some explanation. I'll have to explain that a little bit, maybe. Acquisition of a site for the future martial askar on Mount Carmel. That also needs to be explained. So all of the goals need not be explained. Some are statistical. Increase the number of territories to be opened. We give statistics. And the languages and the number of temple sites to be acquired, the number of incorporations, national assemblies to be incorporated, national assemblies to have their national constitutions drawn up. So anything that you see I don't comment on, it means that from my point of view the notes are adequate. They don't need. But there are a number of points here. I have selected a number of them, and as we go along I will explain, I'll give you further explanation. For example, we start with number 1 on page 2. Adoption of preliminary measures for the construction of Baha'u'llah's sepulchre in the Holy Land. I have given you some explanation, but I just wanted to explain to you that when this goal was first announced, the Baha'is of the world thought that this meant that he was going to draw up plans for the construction of the shrine of Baha'u'llah. That's what the Baha'is understood this to mean. In other words, he had now built the shrine of the Bab. Now he wants to construct another beautiful building for the shrine of Baha'u'llah. And what he says about preliminary measures, that is what he had in mind. But Shoghi Effendi gradually explained that this was not his intention. His intention was to cleanse, to purify the surroundings of the shrine of Baha'u'llah from the presence of the covenant breakers and the buildings that they were occupying. That's what he wanted. So that's what he did. He also had just acquired some property outside, above, beyond the shrine itself and the little property surrounding it. He had more property now. He wanted to develop this property into gardens. What you see today is things that he started doing even before the 10-year crusade began. But he developed it further to the end of his life. The shrine of Baha'u'llah was a little jewel with a little bit of garden around it. That was all. And gradually he expanded this property and made it into a garden. He called it the Haram-e-Aqdas. And then the House of Justice developed further parts of this land. And now you see that the shrine is in the center, surrounded by a big wheel of gardens. And when it is time for major celebrations in Bahji, we walk all around the outer circumference of this wheel as an act of circumambulation. But on other days, when we don't have major celebrations or commemorations associated with the life of Baha'u'llah. Like every year, we have Rizwan period. We have the ascension of Baha'u'llah every year. So we do circumambulate, but on a smaller circle instead of going the outer wheel, the big wheel. So these things developed gradually. Khashoggi Effendi was successful in getting these covenant breakers outside this property entirely. I'm sure a book will be written one day about the steps that he took in order to cleanse, as he used to say, this property from the presence of these covenant breakers. Dr. Jakeri, in his book, has made some reference to it. Amatul Bahar Ruhi Khanum, of course, in The Priceless Pearl, has also devoted a whole chapter, maybe more than one chapter, to this whole question. But that's how what you see today is what we have inherited from the guardian's efforts for the beautification of the shrine of Baha'u'llah. The next goal, doubling the number of countries within the Pale of the Faith, does not need any explanation. The next one, doubling the number of Mashgul Askar through the institution of the construction in Asia and in Europe, needs some explanation. The explanation is this, that the one in Asia was to be for Tehran. And this was not possible, because the conditions in the country were such that they would not give us a building permit to build the Mashgul Askar in Tehran. So Khashoggi Effendi decided that instead of this one Mashgul Askar in Tehran, we should have two Mashgul Askar. One in Kampala, Uganda, and one in Sydney, Australia. And these two Mashgul Askar were built in order to replace the one in the cradle of our faith in Iran. Number five is acquisition of a site for the future Mashgul Askar on Mount Carmel. Now, when Baha'u'llah felt that he was free towards the end of his life to leave the Akka area, the Akka, Bahji, Mazra'e area, and go to Haifa, for example, he availed himself of this opportunity to go to Haifa. And on one of these trips, he went to the mountain, Mount Carmel. And as you know, he himself stood, as I told you yesterday, and decided where the shrine of the Bab should be. He also went to the top of the mountain, and those of you who have been to Haifa as pilgrims or as three-day visitors, you may have gone to the temple site on Mount Carmel. It's at the very top of the mountain. It is on a higher level than the shrine, but it's at the western end of the mountain. So Baha'u'llah had gone there, and he pitched his tent there, and it was there that he revealed the tablet of Carmel, about which we spoke yesterday. And as he revealed this tablet, Khashoggi Effendi used to explain this to the pilgrims. He paced back and forth on the place where his tent was, and with a very loud voice, he chanted this tablet, revealed it. And at the end of it, he clearly says that he has revealed in this tablet certain things which were concealed in his knowledge. So there are certain allusions, as I told you yesterday, in this tablet, which had to remain concealed until the time of Khashoggi Effendi, when he lifted the veil from these words that had been revealed by him, and showing us that this is going to be both a spiritual center with the erection of the shrine of the Bab, as well as the administrative center. The next item is the erection of the first dependency of the Mashgul Askar in Wilmet. I think this is only too clear there that a home for the aged was established. It doesn't need any further explanation. Likewise, the following one about the few temple sites and the acquisition of property, that also does not need any explanation. The development, number 8, development of the function of the institution of the hands of the courts of God. Now, this is a very important thing, because the enemies of the faith have attacked us on this basis, that the hands of the courts were not supposed to have any authority. How is it then that after the passing of Shoghi Effendi, they assumed authority? And they became literally, if you like, or nominally as well as actively, the head of the faith, because there was no House of Justice, and Shoghi Effendi had passed away, and here we have hands of the cause who are not supposed to have administrative authority taking over the reins of the administration of the cause. Now, it's very important for us to know how to defend the cause when it comes to this question. Here he says, development of the functions of the institution of the hands of the court of God. In other words, he, in 1953, at the beginning of the 10-year crusade, he envisaged that there's going to be a new development of these functions that they had. What do we see here? We see that in his last major message to the Baha'i world, he gives them a new title. The title he gives them is Chief Stewards of Baha'u'llah's Embryonic World Commonwealth. When Shoghi Effendi uses the term embryonic world commonwealth or embryonic world order, any of these two, either of these two titles, he means, because he has added the word embryonic, he means the administrative order. That's what he means. So the chief stewards of Baha'u'llah's embryonic world commonwealth, he is referring to the administrative order. So he says, you from the hands of the cause have the destiny of being chief stewards. Now, chief stewards is far more than being an advisory body to the national assemblies. Chief steward is those people who are in charge of something for a temporary period, so that then later they hand over the responsibility to another responsible body. So he gave them this title. Another thing which was even more important than the term chief stewards is he says that in that same message, he says they are charged now with the specific duty of watching over the security of the faith, thereby complementing the function of the original board, whose duty will henceforth be exclusively concerned with the assisting of the 10-year crusade, of the 10-year plan. So they were in full charge of the protection of the cause. They had to guard this body. In yet another message, which was written just before this message here, which is quoted, he says in that message, in June 1957, in that message he says that the hands of the cause and the National Spiritual Assemblies are destined to work together, consult together, and through consultation, they will be responsible for the health of the entire Baha'i community and the healthy operation of these institutions, they will be responsible also for the fulfillment of the destiny of the cause. It is in their hands. The wording is of this message of June 1957 is so emphatic, so dramatic, that frankly, those of us who read that message at that time in 1957 felt that something was going to happen. It is as if Shoghi Effendi was saying goodbye, as if he was saying, now the time has come. You two institutions work together. You don't really need me anymore. This is the impression you got. And elsewhere in these notes, at the end, towards the end of these, I have put these things together, and you'll see how they fit in. So we'll leave this for the moment. Number 9, establishment of a Baha'i court in the Holy Land as a preliminary to the emergence of the Universal House of Justice. This is another area which needs very careful discussion by us. Because Shoghi Effendi, when he established the International Baha'i Council, he said that this International Baha'i Council will develop into a Baha'i court. And this Baha'i court will then develop into an elected council, because it had originally an appointed council. It will develop into an elected council, and then the elected council will become the Universal House of Justice later. So you had these stages enumerated by him. Then when he was giving us the 10-year plan, we saw that he had included this question of the court also in his 10-year plan. And so many questions were put to Shoghi Effendi as to what his intention was. Just as the very first goal was not very clear about the construction of the shrine of Baha'u'llah, many friends started asking him what he meant by this court. And he went on explaining. And I tried to put here for you a section, what really was meant according to his own writings. What was the purpose of a court? Now, the attack that they are leveling against the Baha'i community, the enemies of our faith, at this time, at this very time, is that the hands of the cause skipped this stage of establishment of a court. In other words, we had an appointed council, then we had an elected council, then we had the Universal House of Justice. This intermediate stage of the court did not happen. Therefore, how can we say that this is a fulfillment of the vision of Shoghi Effendi? This is how they are attacking us. We have to know how to defend the cause on this score. When you read the writings of Shoghi Effendi himself and what the explanations that he gave to the members of the International Council, to the hands of the cause in the Holy Land, it became clear that this court that he has mentioned was not to be an international court. It was to be a court empowered to execute laws related to personal status. What does this mean? Matters of personal status are marriage, divorce, inheritance, burial. These are matters of personal status. In the East, these matters regarding inheritance, marriage, divorce, and so on, are matters that are referred to religious courts, as distinct from secular courts or civil courts. Now, those of you who are living in Europe, you don't know that such a thing exists. But in the East, it does exist. There are religious courts. These religious courts deal with these matters, these specific matters related to marriage, divorce, etc. And they are given authority to carry these things out. When you read Shoghi Effendi giving the stages for the development of the faith in every country, you see that one of the stages, which is stage number 4, which is the stage of recognition, his definition of the stage of recognition is that the Baha'i faith should have equal rights with other sister religious communities. What does this mean? It means that in a given country, if the Christian communities have certain rights, if the Muslim communities have certain rights, if the Jewish communities have certain rights, the Baha'is should also have equal rights. This is what it means. In matters of personal status, if they have religious courts, we must have religious courts. Because there should be equality of rights and privileges. This is what it means. All right. So, in what happened in Palestine? In Palestine, we had religious courts during the time of the Ottoman rule. Because, you know, before the First World War, the Holy Land was in the hands of the Ottoman government. It was part of the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire had all these religious courts, and they had religious courts in Palestine. When the British took over after the First World War, they did not change the condition because they knew they're going to be there only for 30 years. Palestine did not become a colony of the British government. It became a mandate of the British government, given to the British under the decision of the League of Nations. So they knew they were going to be there only for 30 years. So they did not change all these laws that existed at the time of the Ottoman Empire. They preserved the religious courts. All right. 1948 comes. The mandate is ended. The British go. There is a little war going on. Israel wins the war, fighting with the Arabs. The Holy Land, part of it, where there is Haifa, Acre, where the Baha'i community, the Baha'i World Center is, becomes part of Israel. The other parts becomes part of Jordan. But this part which had Haifa and Acre and Mount Carmel and all this, all fell in the hands of Israel. What does Israel do? This is 1948 now. What does Israel do? Does it abolish religious courts? No. They preserve the religious courts. So whatever existed in the Ottoman period was continued during the British mandate and was further continued during the Israeli state, when the Israel state was established. Under those conditions, Shoghi Effendi saw how could the Baha'i community have less rights than other religious courts, than other religious communities. If they had courts, we had to have courts. Now, he didn't have any administration. We didn't have local assemblies. We didn't have a national assembly. We had nothing. We only had this international council that he has created. So he said, all right, this international council will be vested with this authority. In other words, if there was going to be a local marriage, it would be the International Baha'i Council, which will have the right to sign the document for the marriage certificate. This is how he set it up. As Shoghi Effendi was watching from 1948 till 1957 what the Israeli government was doing, he saw that the Israeli government was reducing, trying even to eliminate these religious courts. And they wanted to make them civil courts. So the rights and privileges of these courts were being reduced on a progressive way. He saw this. So he told the members of the International Council that it's quite possible, because of this secular trend in Israel, that this goal will not be achieved, the goal of establishing the Baha'i Court. The way that the Israeli government is trying to reduce the influence of these religious courts, one of the ways is this, that if a decision is taken by a religious court, then it is possible for a citizen of Israel, let us say, or a resident in Israel, to appeal to a higher court, which is the Supreme Court, and it is not religious, it is Supreme Court, to break the decision of that religious court. So the religious court becomes under the decision of a civil court in Israel, which is the international court of the country. Just imagine for a religious court being the International Baha'i Council, let us say, to take a decision about a divorce case, and then the decision is broken by a higher court of the country. It was impossible, it was inconceivable for Shoghi Effendi to have accepted such a situation. And they would not give us any rights over and above the others. We had to be, if they were reduced, we had to be reduced as well. And possibly, if we were to apply for the establishment of a religious court, because of the whole trend in the country, probably they would not find it easy. They would probably be unwilling even to establish a new court for a new religion. So there are so many aspects. The International Council made a thorough study of this whole thing with international lawyers. And you will find a report of the International Council published in volume 13 of the Baha'i World, which summarizes for you all these complicated issues that arose in the Holy Land when this matter was closely studied, fully studied, by the hands of the cause of God as well as the International Council. And if you read that report, you'll see how clear it is. The next goal, 5 more minutes. The next goal is codification of the laws and ordinances of the Kitab-e-Aqdas, the mother book of the Baha'i Revelation. When Shoghi Effendi was asked, when will the Kitab-e-Aqdas be translated? He said the first thing to be done before the translation of the Kitab-e-Aqdas was to codify the laws in a manner to show the relationship of these goals to each other, in the form of a code. And he started working on it himself. He did it first in Persian, because all these notes were given to the House of Justice, of course. And from the room of Shoghi Effendi, one of the first things that Ruhi Khanum did was to take these notes of Shoghi Effendi about the codification, which he had all put in one bundle himself. She took the bundle and immediately transferred it to the House of Justice. This is the first thing that Ruhi Khanum did, transferring papers from the room of Shoghi Effendi to the House of Justice. It was this bundle, so that the House of Justice could continue working on this codification. He had started working in Persian, then from the Persian he translated it into English. And finally this work was completed, and you have seen the little booklet which was synopsis and codification of the laws of the Kitab-i Aqdas, with an introduction written by the House of Justice. This thing was something which was like a preamble, an introduction to the translation of the Kitab-i Aqdas into English. And as you know, this thing came much later. So, but this was the beginning. The next item is very easy to explain: establishment of 6 national Baha'i courts in the chief cities of the Islamic East. And then you've got Tehran, Cairo, Baghdad, New Delhi, Karachi, Kabul. All of them are in Muslim countries. And it is exactly the same thing. In other words, since in these countries there are religious courts, therefore we must have religious courts as well. Just as I told you in the case of Israel. But none of these countries were prepared to allow the Baha'is to have a religious court. So this goal remains pending. You'll see that this is one of the first goals that remain pending like this. There will be others as we go along. But at the beginning of the 10-year, before the announcement of the 10-year crusade, Shoghi Effendi called on the Baha'i world. He said, I'm going to announce these goals, but I am adjuring you, I want you to take a formal vow that you will, however long it will take, however difficult it's going to be, that you will persevere as a Baha'i world, even generation after generation, until all the goals of this 10-year plan will be accomplished. The House of Justice considers such goals as are still pending binding upon it, and they will want to carry out these goals. They will be carried out. They were not carried out during the 10-year plan because of conditions, unfavorable conditions, but they are certainly on the agenda of the Universal House of Justice for future implementation. It's enough for this moment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nakhchavani. Now we have our break until 10:15, so you are welcome for having break. So here there are the photos, the pictures you ordered, so please come and take yours.